Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Toshita, and welcome to this 7-point mind training course. My name's Glenn Svensson, and together with Renato, we'll be leading this course together. I'll be doing the classroom sessions, and Renato will be leading the meditation sessions. So let's start with some introductions first, just so that I get to know who you are a little bit, and maybe what sort of knowledge you have already and what you're hoping to get out of the course. But I'll start by introducing myself. So some of you know me already. As I mentioned, my name's Glenn Svensson. I'm from Australia. Originally, my profession was IT, so I spent about 10 years in the computer industry. And then 21 years ago, I did my first Introduction to Buddhism course here at Toshita. Then I went on and did a couple of November courses at Kopan Monastery in Kathmandu. And then following that, I went to Italy and did a 7-year study program in Buddhist philosophy. I finished that in 2004. Then I spent about a year in retreat in Spain. And for the last 10 years, I've been mainly based here at Toshita, running programs and also running retreats and in many other countries as well. I very much enjoy my time here at Toshita, and this is one of my favourite topics that I teach, the 7-point mind training, so I'm very much looking forward to running this program again this week. So that's a little bit about myself, so I'll get Renato to introduce himself briefly.
Hello, I'm Renato. Some of you, we know each other already. I'm from Austria, and I've been coming here to Toshita for the last 4 years, coming and going. And since about 5 months, half a year, I lead the Toshita meditations here. And I'm very happy to do that, and happy to lead this course here again.
So. Okay, schedule. It's posted on the door here and over near the dining area, but just to go through the schedule so we have it clear in our mind. So this afternoon, we've got two sessions with me, 3:30 to 4:30, sort of introduction, and then a half-hour tea break. And then 5 till 6, sort of another session with me. And then dinner will be at 6 o'clock. And then the evening session at 7:30, Renato will give you a little introduction into meditation and start the meditation program with you in this evening session. And then tomorrow, for the next 7 days, we have the same schedule. So 6:45 in the morning, you'll be having a meditation with Renato here. And the till 7:30, 45 minutes. And the morning sessions will be, the topic will be shamatha. So it's basically developing attention skills, because to develop concentration or attention skills is the foundation of all other meditation practices. So by working on that in the morning, that's going to help us, prepare us for the afternoon and evening meditation sessions. And in this course, with Renato, in those sessions, you'll be going through a couple of different objects to focus on. You'll start with the breath for a few days, using the breath as the object. Then you'll switch to observing the mind. And then the last couple of days, just resting in the experience of awareness itself. And, each of those practices, Renato will give a little introduction to. And also, of course, in the text that we're following, I'll also talk about these practices a little bit more as well. And the first thing that I think, this, particularly this evening, that Renato will talk about is the emphasis on relaxation. That if we really want to have a good basis for any sort of meditation practice, we need to have a relaxed body and a relaxed mind. So he'll be emphasizing a lot relaxation the first couple of days, just to make sure we have a good basis for the meditation practice. So that's every morning, 6:45 till 7:30, doing the shamatha practice with Renato. 7:30 will be breakfast, and then in the morning there'll be two sessions with me. The first one 9 till 10:15, and then a half an hour morning tea break, 10:15 to 10:45. And then 10:45 till 11:45 will be the second session. So lunch will be 11:45. We're staggering the lunches so that we don't all get there at the same time, because the introduction course, I think, says nearly 100 people. So we get in first. So in the morning sessions for meditation, which Renata, you'll be finishing just before 7:30, and the other group will be finishing about 5 minutes later. Lunch, we'll be going for lunch at 11:45. They'll be going for lunch at 12 o'clock. And then the afternoon sessions, there'll be two teaching sessions with me. First one will be from 2 till 3, and then afternoon tea break, 3 to 3:30. And then the second session with me will be 3:30 till 4:45. And then half an hour break, and then the evening afternoon meditation will be 5:15 till 6 o'clock with Renato. The afternoon, this text is really focusing on the two core areas of practice of wisdom and compassion. So the afternoon meditation sessions from 5:15 till 6 will be mainly sort of from the wisdom wing of practice, Vipassana wing. And then 6 o'clock dinner again. And then in the evening, meditation with Renato, 7:30 till 8:15, will be more on the compassion side of the practice, the compassion wing of the practice. There'll be gongs for most of the sessions, including the wake-up call at 6 o'clock from the other group. There'll be someone ringing the gong. There are two sessions where there'll be no gong because we don't match their schedule. And the first one is... the second morning session, 10:45, there won't be a gong, so you'll have to keep an eye on the time there. And also the 5:15 session with Renato in the afternoon, there'll be no gong, so again, you have to keep keep an eye on the time for that. But I'll remind you of that as we go through the course. Course materials, everyone should have a copy of the booklet here. This is the material we'll be going through. So it's called the 7-Point Mind Training, which I'll talk about that in more detail later. What you have in the booklet, initially the first couple of pages are the sort of pith instructions from the mind training. So this, there are 57 short slogans that we'll be going through. And then we'll be going through those 57 slogans based on this commentary here, which is from this Ser Chilbu Chegi Gelsen, who actually is a disciple of Chikawa, who's the author of the 7-Point Mind Training. And these commentaries, just really him taking notes from teachings that Chikawa gave. So really it's sort of Chikawa's own commentary on his the 57 pith instructions. So we'll be going through this commentary, looking at each of those 57 short pith instructions. And then you find at the end, you have a number of charts at the end of your booklet, and we'll be using those from time to time during the course as well. And also, you should have all received a check-in this book here, The Joy of Compassion. That's for you to keep, of course. And since... sort of one of the main areas of this text is the compassion wing of the practice. There is quite a lot of useful information in here relevant to what we're doing in the text as well. Now, in terms of how to approach this course, we can talk about cultivating three types of wisdom. The first, of course, is the wisdom of hearing. So that's listening to instructions, and also this includes reading, of course. And any of you who've done a course with me know that I really like to have these courses interactive. So I very much encourage questions. If you have any questions as we go through the text, then please ask questions. But for asking questions, two things I'd like to advise. First, keep your question to the topic, because of course there are many interesting questions about Buddhism, but here we're focusing on this text. So if there's a question related to what we're covering, then please ask. But raise your hand first, don't just ask the question. Because often what I'll do is I'll keep talking. I'll acknowledge that you want to ask a question, but I may keep talking for some minutes to finish the point I was making, and then I'll get you to ask your question. Okay? So this is the first wisdom we're cultivating, the wisdom from hearing. Then, we can talk about cultivating the wisdom from contemplation. So, of course, this is when we reflect and think about the things we hear and read. So here, what's very much recommended, of course, is not to blindly accept anything you hear or read, because it really won't help us if we're just blindly accepting things. Rather, we should follow the advice of the Buddha himself, who said, "Please don't accept what I tell you merely out of devotion to me, but rather you need to be like a goldsmith who checks and tests the quality of the gold before accepting it." So likewise here in this course, if I tell you something, then don't blindly accept it. We have to think about it and see whether it makes sense to us and whether it's something useful or not. With contemplation as well and hearing, modern studies have shown that if we don't reflect and think about the things we read or hear within 24 hours, we forget 75% of everything we hear. So we're going to try and avoid that by forgetting most of the things we hear by asking questions, and then also I'll particularly every morning at 9 o'clock, I tend to begin with a review of the things we've covered in the previous day, so we don't sort of forget most of the things we hear. So hopefully that'll help. Now, of course, with these two wisdoms, we can get a good intellectual understanding of a topic if we listen attentively and we reflect and contemplate. But of course, the goal of Buddhism is not simply to have a good understanding of Buddhist concepts and Buddhist philosophy, because that in itself won't really help us a lot. Because here, the whole purpose of Buddhism is to improve our life, to overcome suffering, to find genuine happiness. And this is not going to happen simply by gaining some new intellectual understanding. Because our behaviour is not driven by our intellectual understanding, it's driven by our instinctive habits. So what we're doing, and of course mind training is all about this, is transforming the mind. So if we really want to benefit from these ideas, we need to bring them inside. We need to bring this intellectual understanding into experience. Then we can start to train the mind, transform the mind. And of course, one key element of that is meditation. So if we can meditate and internalize the things that we understand here, then our habits will change and our perspective will change and our life will begin to improve. And so therefore, in this course, we're integrating both the study part and the meditation part. And so that's what you're going to be doing with Renato here, is bringing the things that we're covering in this text inside, starting to have a little taste of them so that we can start to really transform our mind and improve our life. And then another piece of advice about this course is to have a very nice, relaxed approach. Often, unfortunately, in our modern society, we have this sort of approach of pushing and, you know, this sort of striving approach where we sort of are trying to push to get some sort of result. And then, of course, together with that, we have a lot of expectations. And so I think if we come into the course with this sort of pushing approach and a lot of expectations, we're probably just going to have a lot of frustration. because there's probably going to be some new topics and new concepts here that maybe you haven't covered before. And some of them are not so easy to understand. So therefore, if we have an expectation of hoping to understand everything easily, we're probably just going to get a little bit frustrated. So therefore, whatever we pick up in this course, be happy with that. What we don't understand, the next time we listen or read about this, meditate, we pick up a little bit more. So have a nice relaxed approach, and then whatever we can get out of the course, be happy with that. And then, of course, this course we're running in silence, and I think silence has already begun because the course started yesterday, so they're already in silence mode, so we've sort of gone into silence mode as well. So I very much encourage you to maintain that silence, because particularly in this course we don't have even discussion groups. The only time really for discussion is in my classes, where I very much encourage question answer. But outside of that, then we have silence, and I very much encourage you to maintain that silence, because if you do, you're going to get a lot more out of this course. If we sort of don't maintain that silence, we start talking, we're going to dissipate that, we're not going to get as much out of the course, and then of course we're going to be interfering with the people around us as well if we're talking. So I very much encourage you to keep that silence, and we'll get the most out of the course. And then, of course, it's also good to, since we're intermediate or even maybe advanced practitioners, maybe it's good to set a good example for the introduction course people, you know, about silence and the benefits. Okay, so that's all about logistics. Is there any questions about any of the logistics of this course that anyone would like to bring up? Everything sort of clear? Good. Okay, let's start with a sort of a brief introduction then. So we're following this text called 7-Point Mind Training. And this word that's been translated into as mind training is coming from a Tibetan word. The Tibetan word is lojong. And lojong can be divided into two. Lo here can be translated as mind, sometimes also can be translated as like thought or thinking, and jong has a number of meanings. It can mean to train, and that's how it's being translated here. We have mind training. So it's a very literal translation, mind training. Jong can also mean to familiarize. It can also mean to cultivate and to purify. So these are some of the meanings of the word jong: to train, to familiarize, to cultivate, to purify. So based on this understanding, and here lojong is being translated as mind training, sometimes you see it as translated as like thought transformation and a number of variations. But what we can see here then is that lojong is really about transforming the mind, training the mind. So in that sense, lojong, or mind training, of course we can say, in fact, all of Buddhism is mind training, because that's what we're doing. In fact, there's a very famous quote from a very famous Theravada text called the Dhammapada, which is very often quoted. And the verse says, refrain from all negative actions, cultivate wholesome actions, thoroughly purify one's own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. And so that four-line verse, we can see, refrain from all negative actions. Of course, we're talking about ethics. So this is the foundation of all Buddhist traditions. And I think it's the foundation of any sort of meaningful life. So refrain from all negative actions. Second line, cultivate wholesome actions. So here, of course, we're talking about the compassion wing of the practice, including loving kindness and other the positive states of mind. So second one is cultivate wholesome actions. Third line, thoroughly purify one's own mind. So, of course, to be able to purify our mind, we're mainly here talking, of course, about purifying our mind of negativities and purifying our mind of mental afflictions. And, of course, the way we do that is primarily through wisdom. So the third line is talking a lot about the wisdom practice. Thoroughly purify one's own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So what we can see from this four-line verse is that the teaching of the Buddha is having ethical basis, then engage in the compassion wing and the wisdom wing of practice. And this is effectively what this text is about, these two main aspects of practice. Now, it's very important to, I think in any sort of meaningful life, but certainly in any Buddhist tradition, that we practice both of these aspects of wisdom and compassion. These two wings or aspects of practice are often called wisdom and method. And this is coming from the Sanskrit. Prajna and Upaya. And here method or Upaya, of course, method, we're talking about skillful means. We're talking about how we interact with others, how we behave. And of course, the basis of this method or skillful means is compassion. So therefore, sometimes these two aspects of practice are simply called wisdom and compassion, because compassion is the underlying motivation for our activities. And it's very important that whatever path we follow, that we balance, that we engage in both aspects. Unfortunately, sometimes when people come into some sort of spiritual path, they often tend to gravitate to one of them and forget about the other. And then they end up with a lot of difficulties because of that. And certainly in Buddhism, I see this a lot, is because Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis, of course, about overcoming ignorance through wisdom. And so in Buddhism, you hear a lot about, you know, we have to engage in the Vipassana practice, which is another name for the wisdom practice, of course. So then, of course, people put a lot of effort into the wisdom practice, into their Vipassana or their Vipassana practice. But sometimes then they sort of forget about the compassion wing, and then they end up with a lot of difficulties. Because if we don't balance our Vipassana with compassion practice, often what happens is we can get very self-absorbed and become very disconnected from the world and even become insensitive to the sufferings of others. And unfortunately, I see this quite a lot with people who have this strong bias towards wisdom and put a lot of effort into it. They really seem to be in their own world. They're sort of like blank almost. They're very disconnected from everyone else. And in extreme cases, sometimes they'll even become very unethical, because Sometimes they believe that there's some high level of Vipassana practitioner, and so they think that everything they do is with wisdom. And then they become very unethical and say, well, it's with wisdom, it's okay. And so they become often very unethical. So we don't really want to end up there. So therefore we need to balance our wisdom with the compassion wing so we stay connected and grounded. But also sometimes people sort of gravitate to the compassion wing and sort of forget about the wisdom wing. And then also they often find themselves in difficult situations. One, of course, is that our compassion can become very biased. You know, I'll help these people because they're nice people. They deserve some help. But those people, they're horrible, nasty people. In fact, I'm not going to help them. In fact, I hope they suffer because they're horrible. So our compassion can become very biased. Also, of course, if we don't cultivate wisdom, then we can have the best motivation or intention in the world, but end up doing things that don't really benefit but create a lot of harm through lack of knowledge or wisdom. And also, of course, and unfortunately this happens quite a lot with people who have a lot of compassion. You know, they have a... we see this often with people like... people who want to go out and sort of fix and heal the world. You know, aid workers and social workers and so forth. Full of enthusiasm, full of compassion. And they go out and then often within about 6 months, compassion burnout, completely burnt out. So this, of course, is a classic example of compassion without wisdom. And of course, the wisdom here is the wisdom of knowing what we can do to help, what we can't do to help, and of course the wisdom of knowing when to take care of ourselves and rest. And then there's one more thing that probably all of us have experienced many occasions, is that we try to help someone and then they take advantage of us. And so that is a classic example of compassion without wisdom. So here the wisdom would be that if we allow them to take advantage of us, we're in some ways encouraging them to behave badly. And so that's not compassion at all. So wisdom would say that if we really want to benefit them, if they're behaving in a bad way, we need to be very firm about that bad behavior. So then with wisdom, we can be very firm if they're trying to take advantage of us. So therefore, I think in any meaningful life, any spiritual life, if we really want to have a good practice, then we need to have that balance of wisdom and compassion. And of course, this 7-point mind training is mainly covering those two areas. These are the two main practices here of wisdom and compassion. Now, this mind training, of course, is coming through the Tibetan tradition, which of course is coming from the Indian tradition. And in particular, it's coming from through the ancient language of Sanskrit. And the Sanskrit tradition that was transmitted from India is part of now what's called the Mahayana vehicle. And we're going to look at that after the break. And so in the Mahayana vehicle, which this mind training or Tibetan Buddhism is part of, then when we talk about the wisdom wing, and remember another name for wisdom here is Vipassana. Most of you are probably more familiar with the Pali word Vipassana. In both of those words, of course, the VI means higher or superior. Passana or passana means to see. So vipassana or vipassana practice is higher seeing, seeing beyond. Usually this is translated into English as insight or special insight, gaining insight into reality. Here in Lojong, which is part of the Mahayana vehicle, when we talk about the vipassana practice, then we're talking about a particular insight that we are mainly cultivating. And that is the insight into emptiness. In Sanskrit, shunyata. So here, when we talk about Vipassana practice, we're mainly talking about gaining the insight into emptiness. The insight that everything's empty of independent existence. Nothing exists independently. And we're going to, of course, be looking at that in some detail in this text. And then in the compassion wing of the practice, within the Mahayana vehicle, when we talk about the compassion wing of practice, we're talking about mainly cultivating bodhicitta. Again, a Sanskrit word. Bodhi is enlightenment, citta is mind. So bodhicitta is literally the mind of enlightenment. It's the doorway of entry into the Mahayana vehicle. It's the aspiration for enlightenment for the benefit of others. So here in this text, when we look at the compassion wing of practice, we're going to look at cultivating bodhicitta, and the wisdom wing is cultivating this wisdom of emptiness. So these are the two core areas of practice we're going to be looking at in this text. Now, how to cultivate bodhicitta? Historically, in ancient India, there were two main methods taught. The two main methods that were taught in ancient India and also Tibet for cultivating bodhicitta were the seven cause and effect method, and the second one is called exchanging self with others. The seven cause and effect method was the one that was mainly taught, because it was considered that exchanging self with others technique was too profound, too difficult for the average person. So this is sometimes called the secret technique, because it was only taught to those people who could manage it. Here in Lojong, this is actually the very technique that we'll be using, this exchanging self with others. So here in the Lojong mind training that we're looking at, this 7-point mind training, then when we're looking at the compassion wing, how to cultivate bodhicitta, we'll be using the second technique of exchanging self with others. Any questions so far?
In Vipassana, as I understood, they teach like two things, awareness and equanimity. And here it's wisdom and compassion. Equanimity is just...
Stop. Okay. In Vipassana... They teach awareness and equanimity?
Yeah.
They, when you say they, who's they?
I mean the Gwenkastar Vipassana.
Okay. Right. I'm going to come to this in the next session. Here we're talking about the Mahayana, and Gwenka is from the Burmese tradition, which is part of Theravada. So what we find in the Theravada, and I'll talk more about in the next session because we're going to use the chart to explain this. When we talk about Vipassana practice, we're not talking about this. What we talk about there, we're going to be looking at in the next session. So I'll sort of answer your question in the next session. I will cover that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I don't understand it because my Rinpoche says that I'm going to practice Vipassana before my mind is enough calm. So I don't understand why Vipassana is like wisdom, because like if my shamatha is not, if my mind is not calm enough, it's dangerous to practice Vipassana.
Dangerous.
Like kind of dangerous.
Why dangerous?
Because my head can go like crazy if I'm not, like, if my mind is not calm, if I haven't practiced...
Well, our mind is crazy now. So maybe our mind is dangerous now. But, of course, we're going to come to this. Actually, we're going to see in the very first start of the text. In fact, if we... To give you the brief answer, if we just look on page one, top of page one, the very first instruction is first train in the preliminaries. This comes before Vipassana and Bodhicitta. So that's the answer to your question, is you're right. First we need to train in the preliminaries so we have a basis for Vipassana and Bodhicitta. And so that's what we're going to look at in the text. And what is in those preliminaries is a lot of things in terms of how to subdue the mind, how to train in the shamatha practice. All of these things come in that. So exactly true what you said, is that we need a good basis for Vipassana and for Bodhicitta. And in fact, is that unfortunately, in many traditions, including Tibetan, including Theravada, if we look at what people are practicing, what are they practicing? Often in the Theravada, Vipassana, 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 Vipassana. In the Mahayana, oh, let's do some bodhicitta, let's do some emptiness, let's do some deity yoga. And then where is the basis, you know? Where is the shamatha? Where is the preliminary practices that are the effective basis for these higher level practices? They seem to get left out. And so, therefore, it's important, whatever tradition we're following, to have an effective basis. Because otherwise these practices are not really going to work. Because our mind is all over the place, distracted, agitated, and chaotic, and so forth. So that's what we're going to look at the first part of this 7-point mind training text, is what are these preliminary practices? What are the effective foundation for us to be able to effectively practice Vipassana and, here in this case, Bodhicitta? Okay? Does that answer your question?
Maybe. Like Robina, she doesn't talk so much, she doesn't use the word Vipassana when she teaches Buddhism. So that's why I'm just confused.
Yeah. Because generally in Tibetan Buddhism, people tend to use the word, the English translation, special insight. Whereas I prefer to go back to the Sanskrit terms because they're very clear. Because unfortunately, one of the big areas of confusion in Buddhism is terminology. And so often we find different translators translate the same Sanskrit term into different English words, and then we have mass confusion about what that English word means. And often the Sanskrit term, there's no word in English that has the same precise meaning. So therefore, that English word often has other meanings as well that aren't in the original Sanskrit word. So then if we keep throwing around a lot of English words, we can get very confused very quickly. So I like to go back to the original Sanskrit words and understand exactly what that word means so that there's no confusion. So again, you will find often in Tibetan Buddhism, because from Tibetan Buddhism, when it was translated to English, of course, it was translated from Tibetan to English, not Sanskrit. So there's already one more step. So therefore, you find in Tibetan Buddhism, not many people use Sanskrit words when they're teaching. Whereas I like to try and go back to the Sanskrit, and then it's very clear. Then we have some common ground about what we're talking about, so we don't get confused. But also, whenever I use a Sanskrit term, of course, I always talk about the way it's often translated into English, so we have that connection anyway. Any other questions? Okay. Now, what's the history of this Lojong system of practice? So the history, of course, goes right back to the teachings of the Buddha. So there are various sutras from the Buddha that talk about this approach to practice, particularly this idea here of exchanging self with others. And we also find that then this approach being commented on in Nagarjuna's classic text in the 2nd century called Precious Garland. So already also there Nagarjuna is talking about this exchanging self with others. And then of course we see it in the very classic Indian text of Bodhisattvacharya Avatara from Shantideva in the 8th century. He also comments and talks about this exchanging self with others. And then how this approach came to Tibet was through the great Indian master Lama Ratisha in the 10th century. And as we're going to see in the beginning of the text, he received these instructions from a great master called Tselimpa. And it said that Atisha made this... It said that Tselimpa was actually living in Sumatra in the east. And so Atisha made this hazardous sea voyage from India to find Tselimpa and stay with him for quite some years to receive these instructions. And so then Lama Atisha was invited into Tibet. And when Lama Ratisha came to Tibet, he mainly taught two systems of practice. That he taught the Lam Rim system of practice. Lam means path, Rim means stages. So this Lam Rim system of practice, of course, is the framework or foundation of the Geluk school of Tibetan Buddhism. So these Lam Rim teachings, Atisha taught very publicly, and those were the ones that spread most widely. And again, they form the basis of the Geluk school of Tibetan Buddhism, this Lam Rim approach to practice. But of course, also Atisha taught this Lojong or mind training system of practice. And this was more, again, taught secretively to only those people who could really work with this approach because it was considered quite a profound and challenging approach to practice, as we're going to see in this text. And then through these teachings, then these teachings came down through a lineage. And Atisha's main Tibetan disciple was Drom Tompa. And then these instructions, and the ones we're talking about now, of course, are the mind training instructions, were passed down, master to disciple, through Drom Tompa primarily. And his one of his main disciples was Patoa. And we'll see a number of references to Patoa in the text that we're going to follow. And one of his main disciples, very well known in Lojong or mind training, of course, is Langri Tangpa. And one of Langri Tangpa's main disciples was Geshe Sharawa. And one of Sharawa's main disciples was Geshe Chikawa, who's the author of this 7-point mind training that we're following. And then one of Geshe Chikawa's main disciples was this Ser Chulbu Chegi Gelson. Mm-hmm. who is the author of the commentary that we're following. So these early Tibetan masters belong to a lineage or tradition called the Kadampas. And Kadampa is a Tibetan word, of course. Ka means the word of the Buddha. Dham means personal instruction. And pa is person. So a Kadampa was a person who could see all of the Buddha's teachings as personal instruction. That's the meaning of the word Kadampa. So this was the early Tibetan lineage, and they were referred to as Kadampas. Now, in terms of the Lojong approach to practice, which was passed down here, there were a number of different approaches there, and there are a number of Lojong mind training texts that are still being used today from this early tradition. The two probably most well-known Lojong texts that are used today, one is from Lungri Tampa, called the 8 Verses of Mind Training. Which are 8 four-line verses, very short text. And of course, the other one, the one we're looking at here, is the 7-point mind training. Which are these 57 pithy instructions divided into 7 sections or 7 points. So this is a little bit more extensive than the 8 verses of mind training. There are other Lojong texts, but generally in Tibetan Buddhism, when Lojong is presented, you'll usually get, it'll either be the 8 verses of mind training or the 7-point mind training that is taught. Now, of course, even though here it says 7-point mind training is from Chikawa, Chikawa was not the originator of this system of teachings. This came from into Tibet through Tsalinpa and Atisha and so forth, through this lineage. So these pithy instructions that we're going to go through, this list of 57, already were coming through Tsalinpa Atisha into Tibet. But what Geshe Jigkawa did was that he systematized these pithy instructions into these 7 points. So he systematized it. And then Se Chilpu, his main disciple, wrote them down. And that's why we have this text. Because before this, it was an oral tradition. It wasn't written down. So even though, again, it says 7-point mind training by Jigkawa Yeshe Dorji, he's not the one who... he's just put them in 7 points, all the pithy instructions that came from India through Lama Atisha. Any questions about this sort of history here?
What's the difference between this 8 verses and 7 point? Is it all the same?
Well, it's within the Lojong approach to practice,
okay.
But. Each of these 8 verses has their 4-line verses, and each 4-line verse has a particular aspect of the Lojong approach.
So that's different from the 7-point, kind of?
Well, they're within the same genre. They're both within the Lojong approach to practice in terms of exchanging self with others and emptiness. But the way it's presented here, of course, these are only sort of 8 very brief points, 4 lines on each one, whereas this, of course, is these 57 individual things, sayings, that are grouped in 7 points. Anything else? So we'll be going through this 7-point mind training. So again, we'll be going through these 57 slogans that Geshe Chikawa put into these 7 points based on the commentary Sechubu, which of course actually is just him taking notes from Geshe Chikawa's own teachings. So it's not really Sechubu's own idea or understanding of Chikawa. It's actually Chikawa teaching it, and Sechubu's really just a scribe. He's just writing down what Geshe Chikawa is saying. So you could say that the commentary we're following is really what's called an auto-commentary, where a master makes a commentary on his own root verse. So that's what we're going to be following. And we're going to follow that commentary. And then also, I'm going to be, from time to time, referring to 2 modern-day commentaries on the same text, 7-point mind training, just to get a little bit of a modern-day perspective of it as well. So there are 2 books that I'm going to read from occasionally. One I'm going to read from is this Practice of Lojong from Tralok Gyapgon, modern-day Kagyu master. And the other one I'm going to read from occasionally is a book called Buddhism with an Attitude from Alan Wallace, a Western modern-day practitioner from the Nyingma school of Tibetan Buddhism. So we'll get a little bit of a Nyingma and a Kagyu modern-day perspective on this text as well. So just to add, to broaden the perspective of that.
You'll tell us a little bit about the differences about, in Nyingma, Kagyu?
A little bit, yes. Yeah. It comes up particularly, you'll find it in this section of the text when we talk about the Vipassana practice. There you'll see a little bit of a difference in perspective, particularly the Kagyu Nyingma on the one hand and then the Gelugt on the other. So we'll have a little bit of a difference of perspective there. So we'll see that in the text. Because Geshe Chikawa also had a lot of influences within the Nyingma school. He had some teachers there. So you'll see that in his commentary as well. So we'll get a little bit of a flavour of that in some of the points that he's covering. Okay, on that note, I think it's time for a little break. So let's take a break, come back at 5:00, and then we'll start to look at the text a little bit, the beginning page. There's not going to be a gong at 5:00, so you need to keep an eye on the time, and then we'll start at 5:00.
What's the name of the first book that you said, the writer?
This one, Tralok Gyapgon. Tralok Gyapgon. So remember, we're already in silence, so nice and quiet. So you can have a break, and I'll see you back at 5:00.